based on kind of ideas that started with that pilot, and she just up-leveled it tremendously. I mean, to the point where, as a writer, I was like, oh, I'm very jealous of what you did here, but it's phenomenal, and I love it. But the, so yeah, it started as a pilot, and from there, we got together, Kelly and I got together, when I was looking to launch my production company. I'd been in Hollywood and Los Angeles just working on pilot scripts and comics and stuff, you know, still working a day job for about 12 years, 13 years at that point. And finally I decided, you know, it's like I really need to, if I could put 100% of my time into getting these pilots out, that we're getting a lot of positive attention and traction, but no sales. I think I could do something with him if I decided to try to produce my own stuff. So I went looking for an investor, and I met Kelly through mutual friend just to help me do a proposal for the production company. And during that process, she read my writing and I read hers, and we just have such we are on the same page in so many ways in terms of like how we handle business, how we develop properties, the messages that we want to tell with the stories that we come up with, and that was really the connective tissue with this, with all the stories from MHP, is this optimism is a choice, you know, and these are things that are, you know, they're still kind of edgy sci-fi action drama, the other shows that we're developing, but it is done from the standpoint of somebody in there will kind of act this out. It's not message entertainment. It's not like Sunday school, you know, after school special or anything like that. But really, because we want the maximum entertainment value, but still this idea, we felt like something in the world right now is there's a lot of turmoil out there. And if people can see at least one person who is able to, you know, kind of still move forward despite that turmoil, then, you know, it's mission accomplished. But the story itself came from this concept of, you know, you've met people who've been referred to as an old soul.
Yes.
And yeah, and so we just kind of, you know, I've had a interest in the paranormal and supernatural from when I was a kid, and I completely got that from my mother. And the fact that when we moved to where we lived in Thurmont, there was a family of four, and we moved into a house that had been built in 1760 that had 15 rooms in it. So it was like basically like moving into a haunted house. I was 6 years old at the time, and it just got me thinking of, like, you know, I've always been fascinated by supernatural and paranormal things. And so this idea that our personalities persist, as if our, you know, the idea that not as a religious aspect, but more of a quantum physics aspect, is that the energy of your soul has to go somewhere when you pass. And that energy, if you look at our universe as a closed system of energy, it has to go somewhere. So it will get reused. And that's where, after many thousands or hundreds of thousands of years of people, millions of years of people developing, that's where that comes from. And some people have more connection to their previous iterations, which is what the term we use in the story, than others do. And that's where you will get the old soul. And so that's where the idea started. And then we really got into this concept of, you know, the idea that, and a lot of people I think might agree, that at some point along the line, it does feel like we're all kind of being kept, not at each other's throats, but conflict at a certain level of our society benefits other higher, maybe higher levels of socioeconomic structure. And so the implication of the idea is that our main character, who's played by Santiago Cabrera, brilliantly by Santiago Cabrera, is an economics professor who also is taking up the cause of income inequality and really looking at, you know, he tries to teach his students to really delve into, like, how did people become successful? How do they stay successful? And then he just by happenstance encounters, gets involved in a situation where he begins to realize that certain aspects of his personality that he never really kind of paid attention to before are actually that of Harry Houdini.
And, wow.
Yes, and he goes to a he's just kind of he's at a conference. He goes to a antique store, decides impulse purchase of this antique steamer trunk, and inside he finds a hidden compartment with wax cylinders of basically a diary or a message of Harry Houdini, with the idea that, you know, it's like a message in a bottle that would find Harry's future iteration, because, you know, Harry Houdini, in addition to his escape work and all the rest of it, the stage illusion work, the second part of his career was the spiritual debunking. In the 1920s, the whole idea of seances and contacting your dead relatives was a huge thing. A lot of people took advantage of that for entertainment purposes. And as a trained stage illusionist, he could detect when people were trying to fool him. And so he took it upon himself to start debunking these cases. And what our story involves is him encountering the first case that he couldn't debunk. And as a curious person by nature, he takes up that cause. And as the story unfolds, you'll see how what happened to Harry in the early 1900s is now going to affect Gabe Strasser, who is his 21st century iteration, as he goes forward and has to take up that mission.
Very nice. And what I like about it, I know it was supposed to be a show, but I like that it's an audio show. I listen to it while I'm working out at the gym. I'm a personal trainer as well. So awesome. I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill, and I just get so into it. And sometimes I'm like, whoa, I went a lot on the treadmill because I was listening to all the episodes all at once. And it's amazing.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah. And what I like also about it, it brings me back to the days of radio serials and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And do you think this is going to be the way of the future again? Do you think we're going to go maybe back to that with the advent of podcasts and audiobooks and stuff like that? We'll go back to maybe audio TV, for lack of a better word.
I certainly hope so. And I say this for a very specific reason we recorded it in 2022 and then did a Ted Bonnet, who was our technical director, came aboard as a producer, and his company, we co-produced the show with his company, which is called Radio Pictures. Ted has a 30-plus year career in audio entertainment, both on the radio in New York and then cutting movie promo spots, and just has a very deep understanding of sound and the psychological aspects of sound and also the physiological aspects of sound. So like when we say that something is spine tingling, he actually knows the frequency to make your spine tingle, and he can embed that in this product. And, you know, it really started when we were talking to Ted about, you know, what could we do with it? Because we decided we wanted to do a podcast, you know, primarily because it was a great way to proof an idea, you know, like this can work as a story. It has the legs and the depth and the breadth to continue as a TV series or any number of ways you could go with it. But it was talking to him that we really fell in love with the process, because we just immersed ourselves in podcasting. And I've been a fan. I worked for a comic book magazine many, many years ago in Baltimore. And part of that, the guy who owned the magazine also owned a company called Diamond International Galleries. It's a guy named Stephen Jeppy. And he was really the biggest collector and the biggest booster of collecting memorabilia and pop culture merchandise. He's built his entire, you know, kind of corporate empire around it. And it was through him that I got exposed to like old radio shows, and have been in love with it since then. And so when we had the opportunity to do this, we went to Ted and say, let's take the concepts of how stories were done in old time radio and marry it with 21st century technology. And that's where Ted, in his research, said, you know, what we need to do is we need to use Dolby Atmos for the mastering, and to give a true 3D audio experience, because of, you know, Apple has their spatial audio, and, you know, Dolby is the king of that, mastering what you have to do on the production end in order to achieve that 3D spatial audio effect on the audience's end. And so, yeah, I do think it is coming back. and it should come back, because one of the other things that we were able to achieve because we did it independently, and are now bringing it out independently. And that's not to say there isn't an amazing amount of studio films and things that and television shows that have come out. I mean, I'm a huge television fan. I consume a lot, and at least partially I watch things that I consider research, but that I really just love. But I tell people it's research because they're like, you watch a lot of TV. that said, I think there is the desire to create, which is what a lot of podcasters do, whether they're doing fiction or nonfiction. And it's the same in the comic book industry, which is where I spent the majority of my career prior to coming into TV and starting to do podcasts. Where it's like you have a story you want to tell, and you're going to figure out any way you can to tell it. And it was really, in this case, taking a story and figuring out an angle that would work on audio, and then creating that immersive experience. So, but yeah, to answer your initial question, I do think it's going to come back as a storytelling form. I mean, the biggest thing, you know, that works against, you know, the podcasting still hasn't sorted out how to make it pay for itself, you know, set aside any type of profit. But the idea is that, you know, it costs a little bit of money to do a production in the level and the production quality that we're talking about. And I think that the business is still sorting itself out in that respect, but it is for the way to get a story out, I think, out of comics and, you know, commercial film and television, that podcasting is the quickest way to get going. And that's what almost more than, in addition to the content and the quality, any places that you may go with your story after that, look to see what you've done. So if you've been able to get it out, that's part of what they're looking at, you know. So I encourage anybody who's creating to keep doing it. And, you know, we came up with this idea to do it, you know, I think it was a result of the pandemic too, because at the time we started our company in the summer of 2019. And so we're working on stories, and we were about ready to go when the entire entertainment industry basically shut down the beginning of the following year. And so it's like, okay, what do we do? So we started with this idea of, could we do the podcast where everybody's remote? And then the more we talked about it, the more we said, you know, if the brain, and this is where Ted and his psychological, you cut me off at any point if I'm rambling, but the Ted with his kind of understanding of the psychology and the physiology of how sound is processed by the human brain, he said, you know, when you're listening to a podcast, it can be exciting, it can be engaging, he said, but your brain is always going to know that somebody who's trying to sound like they're running, but they're not running, your brain knows the difference. So for what we did is we decided to stage it, and Kelly will talk much more about this as the writer and the director. We brought everybody onto a stage. We had about 16 or 17 microphones recording the audio and of the entire environment, and staged it and performed it like a play. And the actors were so ecstatic that they were not standing at a music stand or in a booth, and actually saw the other people they were acting from. Because in many cases, the lines for some audio projects are captured just by the performer being in a booth being asked to read the same line 100 different ways, and then they'll stitch it together in post-production. And in this case, we were able to get the live sound, and we still did an extensive post-production process for the sound design, but they were so happy, and it really worked in terms of their performance. They were able to, you know, get physical with the parts of the roles that required it, and it sounds, you know, there isn't a way to fake that, I guess. So I'm sorry for that rambling answer. I'll be more concise.
No, you're good. You're good. I'm so excited about this. And yeah, so one thing I also like asking people I interview is, tell me a fun fact about yourself.
Well, I'll tell you the fun fact about, I can tell you a fun fact about myself that actually connects to the company. And
Okay.
that is something that I tell people is that when I decided to do this, my best friend, one of my best friends is, he works fairly high level executive, and it's done, you know, and he started in IT, moved up through IT and into corporate security. And anyway, he's done well for himself for, you know, over the years that we've known each other. But I, you know, when I went to him and telling him that this is what I was thinking about, he, you know, surprised me by asking for a proposal. So I ended up doing that. But the funny part is that he and I met in a Star Trek fan club when I was in high school, when we were both, he was in college and I was in high school. And, you know, so that's our genre tie-in, because it's just, we both love entertainment, have loved it forever. And that's basically it. And then the other, I guess the other one is if it's about the cats being named Buckaroo and Banzai, which everybody who hears that and understands what it means loves it. When I got them as kittens, I was working for a company based in Switzerland while I was living in Los Angeles. So that usually required me to be online and working by 5 a.m. Pacific time so I could overlap as much of the European business day as possible. And I haven't worked for that company for almost 7 years now, and the cats are still set for European business hours. So so I'm the morning shift, and Kelly is my producing partner and a wonderful creative friend and partner to have in this, is she's the swing shift. Like she tends to work afternoons and it's late into the night. That's how we divided up the company. I don't know if that's a fun fact or not.
That is cute. I like that. I like that. I mean, I told you my cats are all pop culture names, my cats and my dogs. So
yeah.
I have Buffy. For the cats, I have Buffy, Benson, McNabb, Dobson, who we call Dobby, and the dogs are Opal and Sophie.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that is something else, too, to note for both Kelly and I, is that when we were talking about getting together as producing partners and actually her coming into the company, I had to pass her dog's test.
Okay,
but
yeah, okay.
The dog had to approve of me, too. And so, yeah, but basically, we're both extreme animal lovers, you know, to the point where, you know, we will reschedule meetings if our pets aren't feeling well, you know, like we'll be like, whatever, you know, we just, because they're frequent guest stars, like I said, on Zoom calls, is the way I have my desk arranged.
Well, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. Thank you so much for taking the time today, and I can't wait to
gosh.
Talk again soon.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. And if you have any other questions or follow-ups, I promise I will give shorter answers.
No, you're good. Thank you so much and have a lovely weekend.
Oh, you as well. I'll let Kelly know. She asked me to text her when I was done so that she could call in. She knew I was. She knows I run long.
No problem.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks,
honey.
Thanks, Kelly. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.